welcome to our second episode of the podcast. I'm Thomas and I'm here again with Matthias and Ricky, and we are happy to have you for our second episode. Last time we spoke about demystifying Agile. Today we have a more hands-on topic for you. We want to speak about the topic of estimation versus no estimation in Agile. There is a lot going on the internet. If you search for no estimation, there's even a hashtag no estimation. We were wondering, is that maybe something that our listeners are interested in? And maybe some of you, Ricky or Matthias, would like to give a short introduction why we estimate in the Agile software development or Agile delivery, where the estimation comes from and where it is applied. I'm also curious.
Thank you, Thomas. It's a pleasure to be with you guys. I can actually share in the preparation of our podcast today, I was reminding myself how I actually came across the word estimation. And to be honest, the first time when I really was thinking about it was when I did the Scrum Master exam certification like 8-9 years ago. And what I remember from then, and I think it's interesting for our listeners who haven't been to such a certificate or haven't used even Agile development. For me, it was like, okay, coming from project management, we're moving away from estimating time, breaking complex, long requirements into smaller tasks and estimating time. But instead, we are estimating something else in time, which was called story points. I found it very interesting back then. And that has complexity in there. And that was one of the first things I thought, okay, but why do we do complexity? It's interesting. Why not time? And it turns out what I've learned back then is that we as human beings are pretty bad in estimating time. So there is a lot of biases around in our own psychology, why we want to be more optimistic when we're estimating time. We are also pretty bad in estimating absolute values. Like how long does it take to finish a task? How long does it take to finish painting a room, as an example? And even if we repeat it just a couple of times, it's very difficult for us to make an educated guess even the second time, only if it becomes a routine. And therefore, the ingenious inventors of the Scrum methodology thought about something else. And that was the first time I came across, and I love the idea, that we set something up for ourselves to not approach the topic of estimating in an intuitive way, like you usually would do, but in a way which forces us to think about it a little bit more.
It sounds appealing, and I can hear that you are very emotional. Even when you said you were excited when you first heard it, I think this comes from the classical iron triangle of software development in the waterfallish world. We are not estimating the scope of things; we are estimating the resources. And we are estimating the money we have to spend for a software or a requirement or a feature to be done. And in the Agile world, we're turning that upside down, right? We have fixed teams of always the same size, and we have fixed cycles of 1 week to up to 4 weeks in Scrum. And therefore, those fixed teams that always cost the same amount of money and that always deliver some piece of software or value in the best case after the same time. So they had to come up with a different way, and they were then estimating the scope, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think why I was so excited about it is because I actually, in my good old project management days, working exactly with the iron triangle, like you mentioned, it saw it failing so many times. Like time estimations went off board all the time. And it was only over the scale of a large project that you had some buffer times in calculated, and therefore maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. But we are also living in a world where, you know, it would be a fantasy to believe that there is no need at all for any kind of predictability. We are always living in a world that we have to have some stability and predictability. And if time doesn't work and time has all these negative associations with it, like, you know, you said you're going to take 2 hours for a job and then you took three, it felt like you failed. Either you failed because you were not estimating good enough and you gave a quote to your manager, or you failed because you were lazy or not educated enough. But if you talk about something else in time, I think it takes away this psychological pressure of trying to be right, trying to perform, and lift the discussion on a different level, and still giving the possibility to have the predictability we need in any kind of business environment.
But how can you be sure that you can reduce the predictability just by estimating? It doesn't sound very scientific to me, to be honest.
I concur with Thomas. What we started talking about just before we started recording was very interesting. We got 25 or odd views or on our previous podcast. And then it got me thinking, how many views would we get on this one? What could the estimate be? And what can I consider to say or do that would increase this value or reach of podcast, of this episode? That got me thinking. And I think the estimation of what we are doing is useful. It's very helpful in planning, but also the estimation on value of what is being done is equally important, if not more. On the topic of estimations in general, there are lots of pros and there are equally cons on the value of estimation, on the purpose of estimation. From what I understand, there is a pro-estimation party, which is mainly driven by Mike Cohn, who more or less popularized this idea of planning poker and using T-shirt size or Fibonacci series for estimating user stories. This was, I think, back in 2002 or 2003. And personally, a big fan of Mike Cohn. I follow his blogs. I've attended multiple of his trainings. And I'm a big fan of him. And Mountain Goat Software, that's his website. You can check it out. And he's the popular author of Agile Estimation and Planning, the very popular book. So he has made a very strong case for estimation. And as a early entrant into this space of Agile and Scrum, as Matthias said, this was in the Scrum certification when I first understood. I came across the word much earlier, planning poker and estimation, but only in the certification they explained the theory behind it. And then I went on to read the book. And I was totally convinced. I started preaching the idea of using this, using all the theory that's in the book, saying humans are good at approximately estimating based on their experience or some sensory input. They can actually like estimate roughly in terms of complexity and size. And I started preaching this to software teams and getting them to estimate. It led to a lot of good stuff. One of the most important things it led to, in my view, is a lot of real good conversations, which led to a lot of refinement progressively about what are the complexities involved in the story. And that was very good. That was a pro that I saw that happen with estimation. And I feel the estimate itself kept losing its importance, especially in startups or high growth market related product teams. The estimate does not have so much value. The conversation does. This was one of the very good things that I learned with planning poker. But then when I also started working with different types of organizations that were service oriented, estimations were being held as a commitment by the team. You also saw all these bad practices where developers were like just putting extra buffers or story points started becoming equivalent to days. So one story point is like 1 day and two is 2 days. And so nobody can have more than 10 points in a sprint, because in a 2 week sprint, you have only 10 days you're working. And if you're off for 2 days, then you only take 8 points. All this kind of unnecessary sort of bad practices also started happening along with the good conversations. So the good conversations continued, but the value for a story itself started losing any value. That's when developers started ridiculing this process. They said, well, what's the point of doing this? You know, you ask any developer, I can bet you that if you ask them if they like estimating, they would say it's hilarious. They don't see any value in doing it. Right.
I agree, Ricky. I have been in a setup or in an environment where teams were pressured to have story points. So basically, so that in the end, there would be a velocity, kind of the sum of story points that you could work on and that you finished in a sprint. Mm-hmm. And teams were compared, or maybe not team A to team B, but the velocity from sprint one to sprint two of team A was compared, and people were looking at it, and there were questions asked. You had a velocity of 43 three sprints back, now it's at 89. So why didn't you achieve more? Why are you not achieving higher numbers? Why isn't there a growth in story points and in velocity? It became a discussion on velocity, on story points, and not on any value that is delivered to a customer. So yep. I agree that you can misuse the system very much.
Very easily. And
that you very easily, exactly.
Yeah.
And that teams, if they don't see the true value in it, they will do it, or they will cut it short, or they will just leave it. Maybe they become mature enough at some point that they say, we don't need it anymore because we know what we can achieve. And we know that if someone says, let's put story 345 also in, then they can say, nah, that won't fit. We know that. And maybe this is a point where a team doesn't need it. And of course, if you're in this environment where it's totally forced, where it's very artificial, where it's just about using those numbers to
hold the teams like a commitment, right? Like
yes, exactly.
Commitment, that's where it becomes toxic. Yeah,
right. It's toxic because it is used as some measure for performance. And people feel very much uncomfortable with it.
But that's not the case in all the companies.
No, it's...
But there's a particular type of setup where that happens. Definitely doesn't happen at Metro Digital. I've not come across any team actually having to face that kind of toxic environment. And I hope you have not too. Maybe just a couple of more points to add to what I was saying earlier. Like this is what I've seen in my career, not a very long career, as a agile master, prior to which I was a project manager, just as Matthias, in a very waterfallish project management office kind of setup, which was also called agile project management office for some reason. But what I'm seeing now, maybe 4 or 5 years rolling on the agile boat, what I see now is that there is value in estimation, and these are my thoughts on the matter, and this is how I take it, if you ask me today where I am with it. There is value in estimation, and it's very useful to do this typically for a quarterly planning, where the product manager, the tech lead, the scrum masters, a few of the team members getting together and saying, what can we achieve this quarter? These are the 4 or 5 top objectives I have, really valuable stuff. And when they sit down to estimate, it's very useful to do it at an epic level. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to talk about a very good technique to do that, which is called magic estimation, which is like bulk estimation. You just take a big epic with a bunch of stories under it with not much information. They don't have a lot of information, but the team gets together and very quickly just puts it under different numbers. And anyone who moves, any card or story that moves more than twice is the only one that's discussed. So what happens is you can, in one sweep or two sweeps, you can almost cover about 40, 50 story points worth of stories and have to discuss just one or two. And so you really set yourself up really well for 3 months or so with this very quick estimation, also using the same logic which is used in the theory of estimation and planning poker and so on. Mm-hmm. The theory is pretty much the same, but it's done at a... So I see that
again, again, then you mean estimating the complexity of those epics and user stories that are connected
under
to
those epics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both complexity, effort, available resources, available knowledge, skill set, people, new people joining, old people leaving, all that put together. The whole
risk,
the very, very unique status that the team is in, they're able to do this very quickly at an epic level. But when it comes to a story level, I see that the value of estimation is really more in the conversation than the estimates itself or the sprint velocity chart and so on. Because I have noticed teams, despite trying a lot, are not improving their estimation. They're not getting very much better than what they are. They may be actually quite good already. Okay. So don't get me wrong. So it's not like every team is really bad in estimating, and some of them are really good, some teams at estimating. And they don't really get better at estimating. whatever, it becomes a culture in some teams. Like I said, one story point is one day and 10 days. In 2 weeks, sprint is 10 days, so they don't take more than eight story points per head. I don't see this as a totally negative thing. I think it's pretty cool that they can self-organize themselves, plan their capacity independently. Sometimes they don't even like the discussions happen in refinement, and the story pointing just happens in sprint planning. You know, they just put story points there and then they pick it up. Okay, this may sound like very anti-scrum, anti, you know, theory, but this is what's happening. And it would be ridiculous if we do not, you know, accept what's really happening on the ground. So I feel estimation is still useful at a story point level. It allows them to self-organize not only their capacity in terms of what value stories they want to take. Sometimes they don't have enough stories. They say, okay, I got some more space, guys. Maybe I'll take this tech debt. So they also use it to make space, or I have a personal topic related to data, which I've been thinking of, some analytics plugin I want to work on. So let me, you know, I got space this sprint, nothing much happening for me. So they also self-organize themselves and bring value to the team, bring value to themselves. This is nothing to do with the planning poker estimation, which talks of something completely else. Okay, so this is what I've seen is happening on the ground. So yeah, in a nutshell, there are lots of benefits for estimation, both at an epic level as well as a user story level. I do not subscribe completely to the whole theory of estimation, even though parts of it are very true. And developers find it ridiculous to actually do planning poker. They think it's ridiculous. It's like they're making them like kids sitting in a circle and playing some game. They find it like sometimes even degrading, like, man, what are you doing? You know, we're not kids. Okay, we know what we're doing here. And some of them are really senior developers. Having said all this, I would also like to say, estimations are almost always wrong. This also is my observation. And we don't get a lot better at that game.
You mentioned it before. Don't see an increase
Matthias. After a certain amount of time, is it really about getting better? No, I think we all agree on this, that, you know, after a certain amount of time, there's, you know, some learning curve at the beginning, no matter on what level you're doing it. And, you know, at the beginning, you have to kind of wipe everybody in and the whole team and how they're estimating. But at some point in time, you just reach that kind of understanding on the estimation. And I mean, it doesn't really, for me, matter that you estimate a story and give it some points. It's about the unveiling the discussion behind unspoken expectations, right? And it doesn't matter if you use story poker or then any other different way of approaching that in a framework or in any format which makes us discuss these points which otherwise would not come to the surface. But as long as you're doing it, because I am truly a believer that if you would intuitively ask someone, hey, what do you think, team, how long would that take? And they're not in the setup already knowing, okay, let's look that we have different opinions, we have different skills in the team, let's start discussing about different expectations I have, how this could be done, and maybe ask someone about their opinion. If they're not in that mood, then there is no exchange. And that's what I said earlier, managing risk means bringing that to the surface. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about the triangle, the iron triangle turned upside down, we're talking about the focus on what we're delivering in the next period of time and what the whole team can commit to in terms of risk. There's always a risk attached. Yeah? We are, even with estimation, we are not going to be able to eliminate the risks. But what is the team's understanding and commitment on what they are willing to accept in terms of uncertainty, in terms of effort and complexity? And if you're not doing this, if you just go into the forest and ask someone, how tall is a tree? Nobody's going to start a discussion like that. They're just going to blare out a number. And that's what I think it's our responsibility when we do agile development, that we are aware of that and that we set the process up and in motion that these discussions do happen.
But what do you give a team, or what do you tell a team? Hey, please do estimation, and you just observe them and see if they come in that discussion and exchange and use the powers of their cross-functional team of their diverse setup to bring up different opinions and just see if that happens.
That's a good question.
Yeah. What do you tell them? Hey, we are doing some estimation now, but we are just doing it so that you discuss. Do you tell them?
That's a good question. How do you put it to them that, hey, I want you all to discuss, or I want you all to estimate? Because you can discuss.
Maybe it's needed to give even the senior developer those physical cards and say, at three, you all have to raise a number.
Yeah.
And if it's an 8, if it's a 3, if it's a Fibonacci sequence, if it's a if it's a t-shirt size, if it's a if it's an animal, oh, you had the giraffe. You really think it's that big effort? So maybe you have to go through that process that the discussion starts. You have senior people in the room, and of course they know that they need to exchange and that only by bringing in all their different powers and skills, they can solve a problem. But if you don't force them to make that, they will not do that.
I think if we don't force ourselves, sometimes we have to discipline even, you know, towards ourselves if we want to purposely act not intuitively. And that sometimes is necessary. I think in what you're asking, Thomas, at least what I have good experience with in my practice is to just run it once or twice, be open that, you know, it's an experiment. Whenever you see, oh, interesting, point out that something happens. Like, oh, interesting that we have someone raising a 2 and someone raising a 5. That's interesting. So how do we come up with it? And would we have discovered that if we wouldn't have the numbers right now? And then let the team speak. Maybe they would have, maybe not. But I think every so often reflecting back that it helped to discover something also is meaningful to the team. And at some point in time, I'm agreeing if there is a high level of predictability already in the team, a good understanding, maturity, and even if a product is maturing over time, not just the team, but the product is maturing over time, usually also the tasks, the stories are normalizing. Yeah, they're coming kind of predictable as well. And maybe that kind of discussion doesn't need to happen that often anymore.
It really rings a bell here. We talked in our first episode on demystifying Agile, and we talked about Chuhari. And I think this is exactly the same point. Back then, we talked about the frameworks themselves. And I think here, a fresh Scrum team, it helps them if you introduce planning poker to them, if you explain them the estimation process, and if you guide them through it. At some point, after some sprints, they might find out that they don't need it anymore because they come to terms and come into kind of a flow where they know what they can do in one sprint. And maybe the more they mature, they can see there are flaws in estimation because estimates are not right. Or they see that other teams are misusing the process, or that management misuses the process, or ask them to look at their velocity. But maybe for a start, again, it is an important step because it helps them facing complexity and looking at it and not fall into that trap from the waterfall world or from the project management world where you just estimate time.
Now, I have a challenging question to both of you. So let's say we have this team and they have discovered that they don't need the estimations anymore because they have a common understanding and they just have to look at each other and know, okay, we both going to do this together and we can do it and we can take on 3 other stories. How do we make sure as such a team that they're not falling back into an uncertain rhythm, into an uncertain environment? Maybe some new team members are joining. Maybe the product changes. Maybe a new technology is emerging. How do we make sure if we're not estimating anymore, constantly and reflecting that we are on that level, how do we make sure that we stay there?
Good question.
Indeed.
I'm not sure I have an exact answer for that, but to your question and also to Thomas's question earlier, like how do you introduce this to the team that's set in its way of doing things? Somehow related, right? So the team is good at doing what they're doing. How do you make sure they don't fall back? One very important sign is, are the conversations happening? And if those are not visible, if people are like having these conversations in isolation, then try bringing them together for regular refinement sessions. So and get them to speak. I find is useful because sometimes teams are set in their ways. There are some teams that are set in the way of estimation. It's you join this team which has been doing estimation with planning poker for years. People have come, people have gone, but they have continued that culture. And in such a team, you may see also that there is no conversation going on. Just like, okay, 3, 8, okay, let's make it a 5. Actually, the conversation didn't happen, but they're actually doing planning poker. So what I'm saying is
that's two types of,
and that happens. Yeah, I've seen that happen a lot. So there are both types of risks. They're having lots of conversations, but not using estimation, and they're using estimation but not having conversation. So both could happen. I think we need to focus on the conversation and not the estimation. That's what I'm trying to circle back to, is the conversation is valuable. Estimations are valuable when you do quarterly planning. You let business know what's coming up and make sure that what's coming up is aligned with what the business expects, and that's the product owner's job, and he can count on the team to do this with some bulk estimation techniques. But as an Agile master, our focus should be to ensure that this collaborative conversations are happening to progressively refine stories as they get closer to executing in the sprint. When you are using estimation without a definition of done, and this is a very interesting connection. Mm-hmm. If you are using estimations effectively, maybe you do having conversations, you may be estimating quite well, but if you don't have a good culture of DOD, then this whole exercise is also worthless, which is also a very interesting point I picked up online. So
I agree. Yeah, without a good culture of having a definition of done and taking it seriously during the process, it barely makes any sense.
I also want to try to answer your question, Matthias. I would not, of course, I would also ask the people if they come together, if they exchange, I wouldn't look for their velocity. I wouldn't ask them if they're using the cards that I gave them years back when we were all sitting in a room doing estimating. I would look at the sprint goal and at the outcome of what they are shipping to the customer. Was there any value done and shipped towards the customer? Ask that the team, and if they say like, not for a while, then it might make sense to revisit estimation. And if they say, yeah, there is a current stream of value that we bring to the customer, and maybe you even have the customer, the user, the stakeholder in a sprint review or in some kind of meeting, or you have another way of approaching them and asking them if they agree. They say whatever this team is shipping is valuable for me, then I think I don't need to know if they are estimating.
Yeah, and maybe you would also ask this question to the product owner, because what needs to be done is a question that the product owner is better equipped to answer.
I have one more question to you, Ricky. You mentioned before this high value in doing this quarterly magic estimation, this bulk estimation. Also to tell this, I think those were your words, to tell management what they can expect. And then I'm asking again, is that then a commitment? Because can it be in a commitment if it's, again, just something estimated?
Yeah, good point. I think that's a culture question. To be honest, it's not related to quarterly planning or estimations or commitments. I think it's an organizational culture of building a fail-safe environment where people feel they're safe to commit. And I think that will go from top to bottom and all across the organization, not just in software development, but also in any other aspect of business that the company is dealing with. That's what I think about it. It depends on the culture that's being driven by the leadership in the organization about commitments and things like this.
So when we introduce estimating, be it on team for estimating stories in the sprint planning or doing it in a more strategical way in a quarterly, then it's also up to us talking to management and making sure that this shift of culture is also happening, right?
Yeah. We should, I mean, there are different words people use. There's also like WAG, which is like scientific wild ass guess or something like that, which is also basically a guess. Estimation is also more or less a guess. So we should make sure that the guess is understood as a guess and a guess is not understood as a commitment. We need to ensure that, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for your input. I agree to a lot that was said here. Personally, I think that estimation is very, very valid and a good point to use it as a kind of risk management tool, because in the beginning, there is a lot of complexity and a lot of unknown. You have to start at some point. And if you assign any user story some kind of value, whatever it might be, you can track the progress that you're on, and you can see if you're lowering the risk. And with each and every sprint that goes by, the complexity might go down and the things that you know might get bigger. So therefore, your estimates or guesstimates might get better, and it might be a more effective tool to manage your risk. But it will give you some way of approaching this whole complexity and uncertainty that we have in this VUCA world that we're all in. And it just tells you, hey, there is something that you have done. You can cross something off your list, and you can lower this graph on your burn down chart, and you're one tiny step closer to shipping something to your customer.
Yeah, if you say so.
but one last comment. I'm very glad that we didn't estimate the time for the podcast because we just exceeded it by over 50%.
Thank you, Matthias, and thank you, Ricky. And to all our listeners out there, tell us how you like our episode and write us your ideas on estimation. Do you estimate in your teams, or have you stopped estimating? Is management pressing you to get better with your velocity, be faster, deliver more in less time? Give us some comments. Tell us what to do next. Also, we're looking for next episode. So maybe there is something that you would love to hear us talk and rant about. And we're very, very happy to have this possibility here. And we want to make those controversial podcasts where we maybe look at a topic that is known to all of us from different angles. I think it's quite nice doing it. So thank you for listening and stay agile.